and good morning. Your turn to KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Friday, November 13th. November 13th, Friday. Be careful out there. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. I'm Roz Brown. During this year's election and the pandemic, the news media has never been more important, but the future of journalism is under threat, including from hedge fund ownership of newspapers. Despite obstacles, one Colorado news outlet, High Country News, is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. We'll learn how the magazine has survived these five decades. Then Rosanna Longo interviews the youngest person to receive the George Norlin Award in its nearly 100-year history. At the bottom of the hour, two regular features, a timely food waste tip from John Lindor, followed by Trends Diary. Then it's Connections at 8:30. Also stay tuned at 9:30 for another morning of eclectic music until noon here at KGNU. But first, we'll start with headlines. Boulder County will be under new COVID-19 restrictions starting tomorrow. The change will mean further restrictions on restaurant operations and indoor events. According to state data, new cases of COVID-19 among Boulder County residents in the past 2 weeks is about 557 per 100,000 residents. The stay-at-home metric begins well below that at 350 cases per 100,000 people, and that means Boulder County is well into the red zone in terms of incidence. The Boulder County Public Health Department says cases are over 182 per day locally, and Director Jeff Zayak said the new public health order goes into effect tomorrow, Saturday, and will remain in effect until December 14th, unless the county opts to extend it.
Obviously not just a Boulder County, not even just a state problem or a regional problem. We are now in record new territory. We have to not gather. I know this is difficult going into the fall.
The new restrictions mean indoor dining is limited to one household per table, and outdoor dining is limited to 10 people from two households per table. Also, per the new order, personal gatherings in private or public continue to be limited to 10 people from no more than two households. No spectators are allowed at any adult sporting events, high school games, professional league games, or University of Colorado Boulder football games. Employers in Boulder County are being encouraged to allow employees to work from home as much as possible, and the order is just short of another stay-at-home order, which the governor has said he's reluctant to impose. The pandemic continues to worsen across the state, with Colorado again reporting record numbers of new coronavirus cases and hospitalizations just yesterday. In southern Colorado, inmates at the El Paso County Jail, the site of the second largest outbreak of COVID-19 in the state, were not consistently provided masks before they began falling ill. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
El Paso County Jail inmates weren't given masks prior to one of Colorado's largest COVID-19 outbreaks. The Denver Post reports that starting in July, prior to the latest outbreak, masks were only given to inmates if they moved throughout the facility. The jail at first did not issue masks to every inmate because of a limited supply that were suitable for a jail environment. The more than 1,200 inmates inside the El Paso County Jail were not provided masks until the week of November 1st. This is a violation of the guidance for detention facilities provided by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The number of positive cases connected to the jail exploded as testing expanded. On this past Monday, of the 1,200 inmates, 911 had tested positive, as did 73 staffers at the jail. The El Paso County Sheriff's Office discovered the outbreak the week of October 26th after two inmates tested positive. The outbreak at the jail is the second largest recorded in the state after the University of Colorado Boulder. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
As far as schools, COVID-19, Boulder Valley schools are going 100% remote starting November 17th, and the St. Vrain Valley superintendent warned families this week that a switch to remote learning after Thanksgiving break is a very real possibility, with a decision scheduled for November 18th. Douglas County has announced a move to all remote learning after the Thanksgiving break, and Jeffco will move to remote learning for most students. As the number of Colorado cases rapidly rises, the city of Denver says it's getting stricter on mask violation enforcement, now targeting individuals. Denver's top health official says individuals may get a court summons, which can carry up to 300 days in jail, and a $999 fine, which the penalty will be left up to the judge. On another topic, an independent think tank has released a list of 10 actions it says the incoming Biden administration could take to support equal rights and protections for the LGBTQ community. from the ban on transgender people serving in the military to administration support for religious exemptions to anti-discrimination laws. Many LGBTQ Americans feel they've been under attack for the past 4 years. But according to Naomi Goldberg with the Movement Advance Project, or MAP, President-elect Joe Biden can begin restoring protections immediately after he takes office.
We could see action at the agency level for housing and healthcare and education and the Department of Labor to make sure that legal protection for LGBTQ people are in place and that the federal government will enforce them.
Goldberg urges anyone who's been actively engaged in the political process to continue their efforts to protect equal rights, not only on the federal level, but at the state and local level as well. Finally, two of Colorado's most popular national forests are set to reopen to the public following a 19-day closure resulting from wildfire. According to the Colorado Sun, parts of the Arapaho and Roosevelt National Forest shut down last month are scheduled to reopen at 6 a.m. on Tuesday. The weather forecast for the Front Range, sunny skies with a high around 53 and a low tonight of 38. Tomorrow, about 10 degrees cooler, so get out today. It's going to be only 42 tomorrow. It's 35 right now outside our Boulder studios. Was a time when you could pick up a copy of the High Country News pretty much anywhere in Boulder. Like other magazines, it's now only available by paid subscription, so you may not have heard of the Paonia-based independent news source that is celebrating 50 years in the business in 2020. I spoke with publisher Greg Hanscom about the history of High Country News and what it's like to turn 50 years old during a pandemic.
We could see action at the agency level for housing and healthcare and
we had planned for a huge birthday party. We had reserved the Denver Botanical Garden for a Friday evening in June. We were planning to get all of our readers and friends together for a big birthday bash, and we had to cancel like so many other organizations. It broke our hearts. One of my board members recently described High Country News as strangely durable, which I thought was sort of the perfect description of this thing. You know, there have been a lot of Western publications that have come and gone over the last 50 years, Edging West, New West, the list goes on and on, but High Country News is the one that has persisted, and it really is a strange and wonderful feeling. The West has certainly changed in the last 50 years, and High Country News has had to change with it. And change is never easy. High Country News was really made its name on coverage of public lands and small towns around the West. And in the last couple of years, we've really had to reckon with the fact that there are a lot of voices that just haven't gotten a lot of play. We haven't heard a lot from Indigenous people and communities of color. We haven't given attention to urban communities or fence line or environmental justice communities. So we've really worked diligently these last couple of years to make High Country News more expansive and more inclusive. But that also comes with growing pains. But I think this country right now is in the middle of a long overdue reckoning about race and justice, and High Country News needs to be a part of that reckoning.
Greg, let's backtrack for a minute. Clearly, you haven't been there for 50 years, but it sounds like you've had a couple stints at High Country News. So tell us how the magazine got started and what your role is in that.
So High Country News got its start in 1970. The founder was a guy named Tom Bell, and he was a rancher and a wildlife biologist. So the roots of High Country News are really in conservation. And in fact, after Tom Bell left, it was a young conservation-minded group of editors that ran the paper for a while out of Lander, Wyoming. In 1983, High Country News came to Colorado. Ed and Betsy Marston took over. They brought it down to Paonia, Colorado, tucked on the western slope. So it kind of took one step away from the conservation movement at that point, and really became about journalism, about, you know, taking a clear-eyed look at this region, how it worked, who was in power. And they ran the place for almost 20 years. I came on board as an intern under Betsy, and hard to believe, but I've actually been involved with High Country News as a staffer or an intern or a contributor for almost half of its lifetime.
I thought it was fascinating in your most recent edition, celebrating 50 years in the business, there's a black and white photo, and lo and behold, it's Robert Redford leaning against a wall, speaking of Lander, Wyoming, with his tousled blonde hair and his Ray-Ban aviator glasses on, reading High Country News. What a photo.
we were so beside ourselves when we found that photo. It emerged on social media. The son of the photographer was rifling through files, apparently, and stumbled upon that picture of Robert Redford reading the paper. We thought, wow, we were famous for a minute.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you still are. And I was going to ask you, your contributors, as you say, some folks come and they go, but how do you find them? I mean, some of your stories, as you've tried to explain here, are pretty much out of the mainstream, and they do take a lot of mental work to get through. And I'm just wondering, your reporters, as you say, are in the towns on the Mountain West, and they must be pretty close to the ground, right?
Yeah, so High Country News has always been run with a fairly small staff and a big old family of freelance writers. Changed some recently, and we've really invested more in staff. But even now, our staff is scattered all over the western U.S. Paonia is still our headquarters. It's still where we've got our business and circulation and customer service teams. But our editorial staff is now scattered across the West. So Tucson, Arizona, Moscow, Idaho, Spokane, Seattle, Durango, Gunnison. We've got people on the ground. And I think that's what really makes High Country News unique, is that unlike a national news outlet that kind of parachutes in for the latest wildfire or the latest, you know, Bundy standoff or whatever it is, High Country News is here. You know, we're here, we live here, and that means that we can be there when something big happens. That means that we see stories that other news outlets may not. But I have to say that, you know, we have also relied over the years on small local news outlets, and those are becoming fewer and farther between. So we're doing a lot more collaborating now than I think we did in the past. And a lot of that is about, you know, teaming up with these upstart online news organizations that are trying to fill the void as local news outlets go under.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that because we learned last week, of course, that the Salt Lake Tribune will stop printing and delivering a daily edition at the year's end and switch over to a printed newspaper delivered by mail once a week. Oh, boy. And this is a shocking loss for journalism in the West. And when you're talking about collaborating, KGNU is about to do the same thing. We've had a small Denver studio from which we operated in addition to our main studio in Boulder. And now we're joining this collab of other journalism outlets represented by a wide range of nonprofit and public interest news outlets. For example, the Associated Press, the Colorado Media Project, Open Media Foundation, Rocky Mountain PBS, just to name a few. And we're all going to be working from the same building. Of course, that will save money. But we're also hoping it will create a synergy that will allow journalism to survive in the future. And I'm wondering, you've alluded to this now, do you see what you're also trying to do as a model to become popular across the U.S.? Or I guess, what are your thoughts on the changing face of journalism?
Well, I think you've nailed it, right? I think in a time when there are fewer and fewer boots on the ground, when there are fewer and fewer working journalists, collaboration is really the name of the game. There was a time when every, you know, major city had two big daily newspapers, right? And when there were two big dailies at work, you know, competition was the name of the game. Who could be the first to a story? There was, I think, more focus among some dailies on regional coverage as a way to distinguish themselves from the competition. That's just gone. So many cities are now down to a single major newspaper, and that single newspaper is really struggling right now. So to my mind, it's all about how do we join forces, combine resources, and sort of muster the power of journalism that way.
What do you hear from your readers? You said, you know, this longevity is amazing, considering how many other magazines of similar type have not been able to sustain themselves. What do you hear from your readers? Why do they keep subscribing? What makes HCN so special?
I think that high country news readers, they think of themselves as much more than just subscribers. They really think of themselves as members of a community of really thoughtful people who care about this region and who are working to make this a better place. It's taken us 50 years to get here.
Again, that was Greg Hanscom, publisher of High Country News. If you'd like to take a look at what's going on over there, go to hcn.org. It's 8:19. You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. The George Norlin Award, given by the University of Colorado in Boulder, was recently awarded to Nikhil Menkankar, a civil and human rights leader and past two-time chairman of the City of Boulder Human Relations Commission. Rosanna Longo spoke with Menkankar about his work in Boulder as a champion for diversity, inclusion, gender equity, the LGBTQ community, the homeless, and more under-resourced and underserved communities in Colorado.
I was recognized for my work in Boulder as a champion for diversity, inclusion, gender equity, the LGBTQ plus community, the homeless, and more under-resourced and underserved communities in Colorado.
Please tell us what you were able to do with the initiative of changing to an Indigenous Day, but including the people so that they can celebrate this day.
So with Indigenous Peoples Day in 2016, I formed a special resolution committee with local Indigenous leaders to co-founded the Indigenous Peoples Day in the city of Boulder, and we became the 14th city in the nation to do so. What was really special about this was the collaboration with local Indigenous leadership, and really, for me, it was about holding space for them and making sure that this was an Indigenous-led and Indigenous voices guiding the process and what the outcome would be. And what's special about it is, in addition to establishing this Indigenous Peoples Day that so many in the community enjoy, in the resolution we included a lot of special clauses that lead to things like increased education around Indigenous culture and history, especially in the school system where it wasn't being taught, and renaming of some public lands. For instance, right now there's negotiations between multiple tribes in the city and renaming Settlers Park. So all of this promotes Indigenous leadership, healing, and greater cultural understanding of the community.
I'm speaking with Nikhil Menkankar. He recently was recognized for his work in Boulder as a champion for diversity, inclusion, gender equity, and the LGBTQ community, the homeless, and more under-resourced and underserved communities in Colorado. You received this award for the work that you have been doing that is related to racial and hate crimes. Would you speak about that too?
So among the things I feel most proud of in this body of work is over a decade I've been working on addressing bias and hate crimes, and in 2019 I was able to spearhead changes and updates to the city's bias motivated hate crimes law that enhance prosecutorial ability, have added protections for religious expression, and new ways of supporting victims. And what's really special about this is these are the most difficult and challenging laws to get convictions on, and it took a lot of creative thinking and innovation that I brought to the table to find a way to improve the laws and make them better that ultimately now make us a more safe community. And we have better protections for minorities, and through all the public education that we've gotten out after passing the law, it's just a much more safer community that has increased social sustainability as well.
From your own experience being a person of color, can you share with us the change that you were able to do because of your own experience living in the community?
I'm guided by my lived experience. And as a minority and as someone who's made Boulder his home and was raised here, I've faced discrimination and I've faced struggles. And instead of changing myself to try to fit in, I decided I would rather change the community and change the world around me to fit in better with me and make it more equitable and inclusive. For me, as an Indian and Sikh American, among the most important is service to the community and to stand up for anyone who's being oppressed, and that's for anyone. So I feel good that I've been able to embody and actualize these values in my own community. You know, the work around this hate crimes law and Indigenous Peoples Day and many other initiatives I've been able to lead really comes from this place of taking my personal experience and trying to be transformative of the community that I come from in a positive way.
You have received this George Norlin Award given by the University of Colorado Boulder that honors alumni from the University of Boulder that have made a change that affect the lives of people in the community and, like you're saying, the underserved community. What is next for you, and what are your thoughts about what's happening right now, the moment that we are living?
I'm always someone who looks ahead, and I always look at the work that's yet to be done. I'm humbled and grateful to receive this award. It gives me a moment to pause and reflect on kind of a lifetime of work around social justice, civil rights, and human rights issues that I've done. I just plan to continue carrying on and doing the same thing. What a lot of people may not know is that these past couple years, as a lot of these changes have brought them forth, and they've happened in the city of Boulder, and we've taken them out to the county. But more so, I've been very active at the state level and working with state legislators and the governor. And almost all of these initiatives, from, you know, including the fair housing protections and other ways that we've protected the most under-resourced and underserved communities, we've been able to pass them at the state level, which is great. And we plan to continue doing that. As for right now, I think in 2020, it's really special to be receiving this recognition and this award now, because it shows that not only was I ahead of my time, but I'm also right on time now to address the, you know, these issues that are coming forth around civil and social unrest that we're seeing. And racial justice, racial equity, social equity, are all issues that a lot of people are paying attention to now. I think there's a lot of momentum and energy in wanting to do more. So for me, it's just continuing to do what I do the way that I do it, and we will see great positive changing. I see a lot of hope for the future, because when good people come together and work on good things, humanity's best days lie ahead of us.
That is Nikhil Mankekar, a civil and human rights leader and past two-time chairman of the City of Boulder Human Relationships Commission. He recently received the George Norlin Awards for the work of equity and racial social justice. For KGNU, I am Rosana Longo.
It's time now for a food waste tip from John Lendorf.
Hi, it's John Lendorf from KGNU's Radio Nibbles, here with another practical way to cut food waste, save flavor, and save some money. For instance, surprisingly, our water treatment plants deal with an amazing amount of still useful alcohol, mostly beer and wine. Instead of tossing it down the drain, try this. Use leftover flat beer to replace water in yeasted or sourdough breads, to oven braise meats, in cheese fondues. You can make beer canned chicken and stews. You can also use leftover beer to steam clams and mussels, or to make beer batter for fish or onion rings. When it comes to wine, don't waste the water and everything else it took to grow those grapes. Leftover wine can be repurposed to make sangria or wine spritzers, to make vinegar, to deglaze pans after roasting meats or vegetables, and to add to sauces and marinades and salad dressings. You can poach underripe fruit in red wine and serve those with ripened cheeses this fall. People don't tend to pour spirits down the drain, but if you have a lot of extra, fill a jar with overripe fruit, fill with liquor, and allow the liquor to be infused with flavor for a month. In any case, remember that composting, that's the last resort. And you can find more food waste tips and suggestions at news.kgnu.org.
This program is supported by you, the KGNU listener member, and by the Boulder Chamber. The Boulder Chamber strives to build community through business and help their member businesses and organizations grow while advocating for an economy that sustains Boulder for those who live and work here. More information at boulderchamber.com.
Time now for Trends Diary, where Boulder County residents of all ages share personal experiences that relate to a pressing community need. The focus for now is on our shared need to connect and solve problems, despite the increased isolation we're all experiencing during the COVID-19 pandemic. This project is brought to you in partnership with Community Foundation Boulder County.
Dear Trends Diary, my name is Sarah Cahoon, and I am the founder and executive director of Love for Lily. I also am Lily's mama. We have families going through two security checkpoints to get in to see their babies. That makes you feel really safe and really scared. The top two emotions of families in the neonatal intensive care unit, or NICU, are isolation and fear. You just had a baby. That's a joy. But your baby is also very, very sick. Your support system may not be allowed in, and you and your partner may have to take turns at the bedside. Sometimes families have watched their baby be resuscitated 5 times in their first 5 days of life. There's no joy in that. We have weekly groups, now all virtual, for moms and families, and a post-NICU group. We have a private chat group for families who need support in the NICU, and then specific ones for moms, dads, and loss and grief. We're also offering a supporters call for medical teams who need support around the changes. There's so much security and so many hoops that you didn't used to have to jump through. One of the most powerful things we do is ask moms and dads, how are you? Every single person in their world is asking about their baby. Nobody asks how they are. Our why began because my daughter Lily was born extremely premature and spent 3.5 months in the NICU at UC Health in Aurora. She came home on hospice and passed away shortly after. I wanted to understand where the support was. There were people around me and my husband during that time, but in terms of people who understood what we were going through, we were alone. That was our why. Our why now includes so many families and babies that we have had the honor of serving. If you'd like to get in touch with us, please visit us at loveforlily.org. We're seeing communities be built during a time of crisis. There's still good happening despite the chaos.
Feeling inspired? Do you have your own story of making connections or solving problems during this time of physical isolation? Then visit www.commfound.org. Look for Trends Diary and share your experience with Community Foundation Boulder County. Your submission could wind up on these KGNU airwaves.